This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. Ready here to talk about what's happening in the financial markets, a period in which we are, in fact, in a bull market in almost everything. What does that mean? And in fact, is there anything on the horizon that could derail the run that we've seen in stocks, in commodities, and even crypto assets? Joining me now to talk about all of that and how the economic backdrop may affect the markets going forward is John Mackay. He's investment strategist at Schroders North America. John, good to have you back. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ron. Good to be here.
All right. So, you know, aside from the kind of sideways action we've seen in the market over the last couple of weeks, we still have seen, you know, the S&P hit 25 record closing highs this year. We still see commodity prices going up. We still see international markets advancing on a relatively consistent basis. So what do you make of what people are calling the bull market and everything?
So, in hindsight, it's not that surprising, right? We've had all this fiscal stimulus being pumped into the U.S. economy. Other economies around the world are doing something similar. Obviously, tons of monetary support as well. And you have pent-up demand. We're in the midst of sort of the reopening flourish right now in the U.S. We're not quite there yet, but it certainly is picking up steam due to vaccines and all of that pent-up demand that people have to get out and do things. And Europe is probably about a month, maybe a month and a half behind us. There are other countries in emerging markets, most notably Southeast Asia, that are, you know, well advanced in terms of reopening their economies. There are certainly some problem spots, India notably, Brazil, South Africa. Japan, you know, a developed country that is really struggling with the vaccine rollout. But net, from a global perspective, we are a long way improved from where we were this time last year, obviously, but even 3 to 4 months ago. So markets have been trying to price that in. A lot of the gains happened early, as you know, Ron. And now the market is trying to figure out, where do we go from here? How sustainable is this trajectory of economic growth and earnings growth? And that's why I think the markets have sort of started to tread water a little bit over the last sort of 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, so the markets are looking at the Atlanta Fed GDP now forecast for the second quarter, 10.4% annualized growth. 85% of companies reporting their earnings thus far for the first quarter have beaten expectations, compared to 65% on average. Has the market, as you just suggested, has the market really digested all that and is now looking for another catalyst to move one way or the other?
Yeah, this is where things get difficult, and this is where you're going to see parts of the market, certain sectors, certain companies with still upside potential and good earnings growth potential, and other parts of the market where a lot of that has been priced in. And so, I sort of describe it as a rotation beneath the surface of the market, where certain sectors are going to do really well, other sectors aren't going to do as well because a lot of the good news is priced in, and there's just not that much more upside you're going to get out of them. And that may mean that the index level doesn't do a hell of a lot. Sort of it treads water like it did in April, although I'm saying that realizing the market was actually up 4%, which is pretty good for a month. And so I think the rate of change is going to slow down. And it feels ridiculous saying this. By the end of the year, we're going to be growing at somewhere around 5% on a quarterly GDP basis, which is an incredible number given where we were 2 years ago. But it's obviously not as good as the number you just threw out there, which is 10% for the second quarter. So, I think the market is going to have a tough time sort of figuring out who the winners and the losers are. I'm sure we'll get into this, but there's other issues coming down the road, or potential issues coming down the road, which may affect company profitability. Things like taxes, input costs, rising wages, et cetera. So, I think it's actually a good market for an active investor, where you can, try and make bets on individual companies, individual sectors, or parts of the global markets that might have more upside potential because recovery is delayed, not stopped. Versus just being forced to try and keep up with a big beta trade that's built on the back of a lot of stimulus.
Well, let's talk about those things that might throw a monkey wrench into the machinery here. First, you said higher taxes. Now, clearly, there's no unanimity of opinion even within the Democratic Party about what level taxes should rise to fund these, let's call them, ambitious program ideas and proposals from the Biden administration. And it looks like they won't be as draconian a set of tax hikes as some people fear. But still, is there any evidence, and I've looked at this myself, to suggest that tax rates drive market behavior?
In the short term, I think there is. If you think about 2017, when Trump, late in 2017, once he had gotten or tried to get some of his other platform issues done, and he couldn't get them done, so he turned to taxes, and passing a tax cut seemed almost inevitable at the time. The market really didn't start to price that in until it looked like it was inevitable that he was going to get it passed. And you also saw analysts not increase earnings expectations until it was in print and done. And so I think that's what the market's going to try and do. And markets rallied for a brief period of time, but the net effect, I think, was sort of washed out over sort of a 3 to 4 month period. So I think the market's going to start to try and price it in as we move through this year and we get more details. To your point about getting the moderates within the Democratic Party to agree to those tax hikes is going to be difficult, but even people like Joe Manchin, who is sort of the linchpin of any deal they do, has said that a 25% statutory tax rate is acceptable to him. So I think it's very likely we get higher corporate tax rates. And then the nuance comes into it. Which companies are going to be more affected than others by those tax hikes? Which companies are going to pay a bigger price in terms of a hit to earnings? And I think if you look at who the biggest beneficiaries were back in 2017 from lower taxes, it was, I'm generalizing here, but it was effectively, information technology companies and healthcare. And the biggest losers were companies like energy, materials, and industrials. And I think you can flip that around this time around because those companies tend to pay a higher effective tax rate than the big infotech and healthcare companies. And part of this tax plan is trying to go after taxes that are being sheltered overseas. And those are the companies that get a lot of their tax benefit from setting up offices and factories and things like that in lower tax havens around the world. So I think there'll be some nuance to it. I think it'll negatively affect the markets on a headline basis. But I think underneath the surface, there will be some relative winners and obviously some relative losers.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Well, let's talk about one of the other things that you mentioned, which a host of companies in their earnings calls have mentioned so far this quarter, which is rising input costs.
Yeah.
And then passing those costs along to consumers, which we can then call inflation. Is this a one-time piglet through the python reset of prices, or is this something where the rate of acceleration will continue beyond, let's say, the next quarter, two, three?
So it's a very difficult question to answer because it's hard to know. If we knew where we're going to be a year from now, we'd be making a lot of money in the markets. And that's what makes a market, right? It's trying to discount what that potential impact might be. Is the inflation, the rise in inflation we're seeing right now, is that a more permanent effect on the economy and companies, or is it transient? And I think the market is pricing in transient right now. You can see that in inflation expectations. Short-term inflation expectations are much higher than long-term inflation expectations, which are fairly anchored. But I think, you don't fight the Fed. And what the Fed is trying to do for the first time in 30 years is actually push inflation sustainably higher. And so I think, to your point about the pig through the python, I think it's going to be multiple pigs through the python. You're seeing that in, obviously, like you said, input prices are going up. So we've seen material prices go up. You've got supply chain shortages and things like computer chips. That's certainly affecting the prices paid. You've got housing prices going up, I think, in a good way. I don't want to scare people about what happened in 2006 and 2007. It's nothing like that. But you also have wages going up. And I think that, to me, is something that we haven't seen in some time, is actual pricing power for labor, for workers. And I think that is where we might see the more sustainable effect of inflation. And I think I'd just finish by saying that some inflation is good. inflation means higher nominal GDP. Inflation means higher prices, potentially higher revenues, as long as the companies can pass some along that along to consumers. And if consumers are getting paid more in higher wages, they can absorb those higher prices. There's a breaking point, somewhere there where too much inflation is bad. But I think some inflation is actually a good thing for equity markets. It's a good thing for risk assets, and it can be absorbed by some companies, obviously not all.
Yeah, and we don't have enough time to go into the structural differences between the 70s and now. We'll have to do that another time. The key question, though, is at what point does the Fed decide enough is enough or too much is too much with respect to inflation? Some people are saying they start their taper talk in June. Others say September. Others say next year. That is a potential turning point for equities once we get an indication from the Fed that policy is shifting, correct?
It is, but I think as we've heard Powell and other Fed officials say, they're not even thinking about talking about inflation. And so when they start thinking about talking about it, remove one of those talkings in there, then I think that we can sort of see how the market adjusts, right? It's the bully pulpit of the Fed. You can talk the market down, you can talk the market up without actually doing anything to your balance sheet or the amount of purchases you're making on a monthly basis. So we will get to a point probably later this year when they have to start talking about the possibility of tapering, but actual tapering probably doesn't occur until sometime in 2022. Assuming all else equal, the market can absorb it and financial conditions are still fairly easy. I think the Fed is going to be very, very wary given some of the mistakes that we've seen over the past 10 years, 2013 with the taper tantrum, and then 2018 when Powell started hiking rates, or the effect of those hiked rates really had a negative impact on the markets and financial conditions, and probably took some steam out of the economic growth that we had at the time. But I think he's extremely wary of doing that. So I think it'll take longer than expected to get to a point where the Fed is actually talking about tapering. And so I think it's late this year at the earliest before we get there.
Let me talk about the flip side of this, which is the one risk we haven't fully discussed. We've alluded to it to an extent, but you mentioned India, Brazil, South Africa, not being able to get their arms around, and Japan even, their arms around the coronavirus, get people vaccinated. India is, a tragedy writ large, even larger than anything we've seen thus far. What's the risk of a resurgent virus in the United States knocking us off course?
So I think that is the biggest risk, and I'm not going to pretend to be a doctor or a virologist that knows these things, but based on the data we've seen so far, it looks like we could be at herd immunity by the summer. I realize the pace of vaccinations has slowed down, which is ironic given how widely available they are right now. But still, you've got 1 million+ people getting vaccinated on a daily basis, or at least receiving one dose on a daily basis. So I think we're in a pretty good position. And I think the concern would be that as we enter the fall, caution, maybe the summer is, wide open and people can get out there and hang out with friends and family and travel and do all the things we've been waiting to do for the past year plus. But by the fall, we need, a booster shot. We need something to sort of help protect us as we go through the winter season. And the risk of variants and things like that coming from places like Brazil, India, and South Africa is something that's going to be lingering out there. So I'll give you an optimistic last point in this, which is, we never would have thought in March, April of last year that by the end of the year, by the end of 2020, we would have more than one viable vaccine. We'd never seen that pace of vaccinations being produced ever in the history of vaccines. And I think you've got companies like Pfizer, Moderna, or you've got college departments that are looking at this, and they're looking at anything they can do to tweak those vaccines to mitigate and stop the spread of these variants. And it's not foolproof, but I put my faith in science, in the ability of these virologists to basically produce something that it can help protect us, God forbid, a nasty variant comes out of one of those countries.
All right, so final question then, against this backdrop, we have spoken quite often and quite publicly about what we like to call the Schroeder's trade, the rotation from large to small, from growth to value, from domestic to international. Is that something that persists? Or is there any reason to believe that given the staggered rate of improvements that we're seeing around the world, and then again, some of the other headwinds you mentioned prospectively in the United States, that trade comes to a halt?
No, I don't think so. And I'll give you a couple of quick reasons why. International still remains cheap to the U.S. There is no tax hike potential for international companies. International equity markets in general tend to be more cyclically oriented than U.S. equity markets. You get more industrials, financials, materials, energy, et cetera. And as global growth picks up, yes, there's a delay in sort of the recovery in places like Europe and Japan and certain pockets of emerging markets. As that global recovery picks up, areas like Europe are more oriented towards global trade. So as global trade picks up, they should benefit from that. So I still think that trade makes a ton of sense. There are pockets of the cyclical trade that certainly have benefited probably more than others. But I think from a valuations, earnings growth perspective, as well as just a sentiment perspective, right? The U.S. has been sort of the first big major developed economy out of the coronavirus pandemic, which also means, as we discussed earlier, that the pace of economic growth and earnings growth is going to slow down versus areas of the world that are a little bit delayed. So still love that trade, still think it makes a ton of sense, and still think it's where the winners will emerge over the next couple of years plus.
All right, John, always a pleasure. We'll check in with you later in the year. Appreciate your insights. John McKay, investment strategist at Schroders North America. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for listening to the U.S. Lens. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks to share more insights and suggestions on how to approach these markets when we return just about 2 weeks from now. Have a good day. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or give us ideas for future shows, you can email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. If you want to listen to the Investor Downloads back catalogue, and why wouldn't you? You can go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.